Season's greetings to all, and to all a warm welcome to the first side project for our little podcast, where we take a look at something current, a new one released in 2021. Despite reservations due to recent revelations about creator He Who We Don't Be Named, we will be taking an episode-by-episode look at new HBO show The Nevers. As stated on Binging Buffy, it takes much more than one man to make a show, so it shouldn't take one man to break a show too. I'm your host, Jack, and guesting alongside me today is my international friend and regular programming co-host, Tony Farina. Good evening, sir.
Hello. How are you? Afternoon for me.
Yeah, good
time.
Point.
Time. It's all silly. There's timey-wimey. There's some timey-wimey things with our talk today.
There are, yeah.
Yes, I'm excited to talk about that.
Yeah, I found that a bit problematic, but we'll get into that a bit later on.
We will, for sure.
Oh, good. Feels like you feel the same.
Yeah.
All right, so this is your obviously first Nevers appearance.
Yes, thanks for doing this. The show is great so far. I love
good.
It.
Good, thank you. I'm glad. Obviously, it's my first foray into hosting rather than just the guy that turns up and gets to talk and not do any of the hard work. So, yeah, it's nice. It feels like, yeah, they've gone quite well so far, I think. And it's been nice to pull my sister in and have a female voice too.
For sure.
Much like we felt, obviously, with Tonya for Buffy as well. It's been nice to have that female voice. What have you thought of the first four episodes so far?
Well, I think I like a good character-driven show.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some, I mean, the two leads are special. Yeah. I will be hunting them down. Once this is over, I'll be hunting them down on Internet Movie Database and finding whatever they're in. Laura Donnelly and Ann Skelly are treats. They are, I really can't get over how natural they are. Mm-hmm. So I love it. Olivia Williams, you know, and you got Olivia Williams, you got Pip Torrens, you got Nick Frost, Ben Chaplin. You've got like this supporting cast, people who you know what you're going to get. I know you and Dan talked about not really liking Nick as Declan. I like him.
Sure.
I think it's good to go against type sometimes. And when you think back to Spaced, he was kind of a Mike. Wasn't his Mike was his name?
Yeah.
He was kind of a dick on that too, right? I mean, you know, so not like this, but so I really love the supporting cast. I think the big names, you know, I think the ones that bring the money in, they're like, we got Nick Frost and Ben Chaplin. They're like, oh, well, Olivia Williams is going to be on this. Here's some money. So I think that probably helped. And they know that. I feel like those characters, those actors know they're in it to support. So I've enjoyed the characterization. And I think, the woman who plays Harriet is a star waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I really am impressed. The problem is we only have to cram it all in six episodes. So it's like, they really need to lean into the plot. Whereas the other stuff from this creator and this creative team, they knew they had more time. So let's just do a one-off. And I think even when you think about like The Flash and Arrow, I don't know if you ever watched those, but any of the CW superhero shows, or any like even Daredevil, Jessica Jones, those shows, while they had, each series had an arc, right? Each series and each season had its own arc. There would still be some one-off episodes. So you can get to know the characters, but this is all, we've got this one thing. And so because the plot is there and it's designed to be 12 episodes, but we're not sure it's going to get there. So that's just like 5 pounds of, or 10 pounds of plot in a 5 pound bag.
Mm-hmm,
that's one of the issues I'm having. But I think just based on the performances overall, I mean, like I could just go on and on by some of this, what's her name? Viola Pettlejohn, who plays Myrtle. Oh my God.
Sure. Yeah. Amazing.
What is she doing? Like, is she just a polyglot or is she that good? It seems so naturalistic. So I don't know if that was the casting call. It's like, must need a polyglot.
Sure.
If it was just like, we're just going to phonetically teach you these things. You have no idea what you're saying. I have no idea, but I think she is special. And again, Kieran Sonia Suar is her name, plays Harriet. She's amazing. So I love this supporting cast and I'm excited to see where they all go. So that has been the most joy for me because I love characters. Mm-hmm. These are some cool ones.
I think that's totally true. I think characters make this show. You're right. And like my sister, obviously, when she's been on, it's been something like the mystery is not really working for her. It does for me, to be fair. I quite like it. But every episode is overstuffed. Always.
Always.
This one particularly, I think, there's a lot of jumping around in this episode. What I do when I'm watching it and then afterwards when we have my notes, to think about the breakdown, I just do a list of like kind of locations or what, you know, like I suppose scenes, like different scenes that would be in a shooting script. And I've got 17 for this episode.
For, was it like 48 minutes?
Yeah.
That's too much.
A couple of minutes for each place. And we're just, now we're jumping here and now we're jumping there. And it's, yeah, it's definitely too much. And I think you're right. It's because they have this, all this plot and narrative they want to get in, and they want to drop all these little hints and secrets to get you to come back, for, I suppose, for the back six, that it's all over the shop at times. And I think almost every episode has fallen into a similar pattern now, where the first half is choppy and not very good. And then the second half has an end goal where it wants to get to. It wants to get to, not that this is any good, but in episode two, it wants to get to like Malady's Batman 66 trap.
Yeah,
which doesn't work. But then, you know,
doesn't work. I don't know why they allowed that. I don't know who said that was okay. Like Jane Esperson was there. She had to say no. I mean, I don't know how she did. I mean, that tells you the power dynamic in this show, though, because she's better than that.
Yeah.
We know she's better than that. And so she is obviously wasn't in control enough of it. And I think in her hands, if they give her just Jane as the sole showrunner, the opportunity to do another six, I think she's going to clean it up. But because it wasn't just her, and there was, you know, that. And again, I'm all for, I love Batman 66.
Of course,
Batman 66 movie is in my top five Batman movies. It's my third favorite Batman movie. Like, I love that movie so much. But because it knew what it was, that wasn't this. This show isn't that. So I don't understand what you're doing.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, like I said, that's but that's been the pattern, hasn't it? Like episode three was the build up to the Odium fight and then the Mary twist. Yeah. And this seems to be that pattern. Now, episode four was the reveal, wasn't it, in the warehouse of who'd been working against them and who had, it was Lucy, wasn't it, who had used the wrong phrase, but the only phrase I can think of, who had turned against them.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's intentional.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah. So this is the pattern, isn't it? And this episode does it again, where the back half and the end is pretty decent, but the first half is like, now I'm here, and now I'm there, and now I'm there, and now I'm there.
Well, and you know what's really even more, and I know I don't mean to go completely out of order, but I think in this one, what really makes it more problematic is the big standoff that Penance and True have, Amelia have, is awesome. But that scene is so long.
Right, yeah.
And it shouldn't feel long. It's supposed to be tense because what I think is so great again about the characters is that we can see on their faces, we get, ooh, Harriet's going to be conflicted. And we know, ooh, you know, how's she going to handle it? Or how's this character? And like, cause we know and like these characters and, you know, even bringing in the new characters, I think are great. You know, when they bring Annie into the fold and then Annie brings Nimble into the fold.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm like, these characters are so cool. And so it's cool to like, you know, what's Primrose going to do? And I love her ultimate decision. So that scene was normal length. And I couldn't figure out why it bugged me so much when I watched it until you just now said it. That's the problem. That's why I just jumped ahead. I'm sorry. Because it's so quick. When you get to this moment of tension, it feels out of place in this episode. And really, that's like a huge emotional moment in this show, and it deserved the time that they took on it. But when you didn't give anything else any chance to breathe, when you get there, it feels like you just ran into a wall instead of just taking a beat. There's a difference between taking a breath and slamming on the brakes.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Cause I agree. It felt like it dragged.
And it shouldn't have.
Make your decision already, because we know the next bit's probably going to be good. So let's get there.
Yeah, but it shouldn't have. It was an important scene. We should have been able to sit with it, but I couldn't feel like I could. And until you just articulated it that way, I didn't know why it bugged me. I was just kind of like, so I was going to bring up, like, I was going to ask you, why does that scene feel wrong? But you've already told me. So I'm like, oh, that's why, because
we got there between us.
Yeah. That's nice. I mean, it was still, and again, the performances, everybody's good. The guy who plays Horatio is so good and so compelling and so earnest. I just really can't get over that this is going to be a star factory.
Yeah.
If the show never moves on, this is a star factory.
Yeah.
So, but it's wasting some great performances.
Okay. Well, let's see who you pick out as we go, because mentioning that Horatio Doctor is a good way to start, isn't it? Because we get our little montage at the start, kind of placing where everybody is. Because as we find out later on, it's like 4 weeks, 5 weeks later.
It's been a month. Yeah. Yeah. And it was a throwaway line. I think that was good writing that she just says, we've sat around for a month, blah, 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 is what True says. So I was like, oh, that's a good way to pass time. But we maybe should have started there instead of starting where we start.
Yeah, absolutely.
Release the dogs is all I'm saying. Release the dogs.
Yeah, fun, fair. But I don't know, for me, this time jump felt problematic because...
Oh, okay.
Suddenly everyone's talking about stuff that we've missed out on. Everyone's galanthi this and galanthi that and galanthi and galanthi. And I'm like, what's this? What's this mention? And like, you know, I'm an intelligent viewer because we've seen enough TV now. Okay, I know you're talking about that glowing orb. I've worked it out, but it feels like there's an episode missing between 4 and 5 for me.
That's possible. That could easily be true. That makes a lot of sense. I hear what you're saying. Yeah, for me, I just thought it was a nice bit of dialogue to explain how much time has passed. But no, you're right. Yeah, because when they do start saying galanthi, you're like, wait. And it was, and the, at the end of the episode 4, when Harriet is reading out the message that Myrtle says, she's calling to her. She's like, come and, come and help. But that you're right. They never said the name.
No.
Oh.
And they left you wondering, like, is it her husband that's passed away? And, you know, we've all got our theories of like, what's going on with Amalia? Is she one of these beings? Is she from the future? She's definitely from the future.
That's what you think for sure.
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think she's not seeing the future. I think it's her memories of things that have already happened.
Nice.
It's a version of her future self. I don't know. Cause she keeps saying, I don't know why I've been left here. What's my mission? And I definitely think she's from the future. Yeah. Yes, I think the issue is that had we had that episode, nothing would have happened. Like, Manatee's in prison. Everyone's moping over the fact that we've lost Mary and now we've lost Lucy. Like, I get it. I get why we've made the time jump. But I think, I think you're right. The 4 weeks bit later was fine. But the some of the dialogue about what they've been discussing in that time was problematic, I think.
Sure. No, and and that could have easily been solved with your reporter character, who that's a big reveal later, or even with Mundy. You've got to, especially Mundy, Ben Chaplin, again, he knows, he's like, why didn't you just, instead of calling me Inspector Mundy, why didn't you call me Captain Exposition? Because that is why he's there.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because you need it. You need somebody who can be like, I'm between all the worlds. And it makes sense having it be a police officer who's keeping his secret. I know you and Rhea were talking, or you and Dan were talking about not really liking the reveal. But here's why I like it, that he's gay, is that it gives him the chance to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. He is part of this world over here and with Swan. And he's obviously in love with, not in love with, but was, he loved Mary. So he's part of that world. He has a genuine concern for the touch. Plus, he's a police officer. So he's in good enough standing that he can be in the box with Lord Mason. So I think it's a good, well-written character. So by making him gay, you're saying, and I get what you're saying, like in the moment, you're like, what's the point of that? The point is it gives him a reason for Swan to trust him. That's what I think.
That's a really interesting point I hadn't thought of. I think the problem for me in that episode was the idea that they were linking it to the touched and people having a turn.
Sure. Yeah.
He was hoping that was going to be his turn, which felt a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm just going to pretend that part didn't happen. I'm going to use it as a plot device.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that makes total sense. And it does. It fits me everywhere. And, I think I've said every episode, like, Ben Chaplin is awesome in everything he does.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right. Even when he's just talking, here's a plot point and this character needs to move here. And this character did that. It works because of his delivery. Absolutely.
Yeah. He's all in.
Yeah.
Just like even just the simple thing in the one episode where he's sitting at the bar for 2 hours. And the way he performs that you believe he was sitting there for 2 hours, and also the way that he, it gets him there. And they're like, because it's him, because he's a cop, it allows him to be there. And so I think that works in the way that things move around. But I agree with what you're saying in this episode. We needed him to step in as Captain Exposition and fill us in. And he would have been the person to do it.
He definitely would have been. I agree. Because then we just get like, so we have this montage, which has another one of the problems that I keep harping on about the female nudity.
Right. Release the dongs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a really lingering.
It was.
It was too long at first, because that's like the opening scene almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're like, this is, and I was honestly a little surprised, and I don't know anything about Laura Donnelly, but I felt like the way that this show was set up is that they were going to treat the extras that way, which again, isn't better.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And so it was weird because they go out of their way. Clearly Anne Skelly's like, nope. Because there was easily a chance later in this episode for her to show it all, but the mirrors clouded in just the right way. And He Who Shall Not Be Named directed this episode.
Yeah.
And so it's really lingering. And I didn't know that, but I guess like within that scene taking way too long. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, then it's over. And then it's going to start again. And it's like, let's just have a 5-minute sex scene. Like, this is not a French art film.
Yeah, you don't
need that at the beginning. So if there's 5 minutes we could have back and put in Mundy's mouth to have him say something.
Yeah, definitely. I thought the same. I thought it was, you know, I thought we were starting at the sex club, at the gentleman's club.
But no.
And I was like, hang on. No, that's Horatio and Amalia. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then we just bounce around for a while, don't we? We have like people doing stuff at the gentleman's club. We have.
Is that the subtitle of this one? Episode 5, people doing stuff.
It is though, isn't it? It's people doing stuff. We have people digging underground. We have people at the orphanage getting annoyed.
Yeah.
But it's all just, I don't really know what it's adding for quite a while. Really, I think it takes until about the argument. Or maybe we see Malady. We see Malady singing in prison, don't we?
Yeah.
Because we had this comment earlier about how she's singing nursery rhymes. So we have Malady singing a nursery rhyme over Penance doing some of her inventing. That was sort of the first moment, I think, where this episode got me interested. Until then,
It was about Penance.
Say again?
It was about Penance, too, yeah. Finally.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
You miss her for that first part of it. And again, I like True. I think that, I think Laura Donnelly's great. I think she's an amazing actor and she commands the screen. Which again is why she didn't need to take her shirt. We get that they're fooling. We know they're having sex. Like if you're watching the show and you got this far along and you didn't realize what was going on with Horatio and Amalia, you're an idiot. And then, and again, you can still show it. It can still be like, you know what this reminded me of? And again, I love this movie, but there's lots of like random nudity in Highlander, right? There's like, and then in Highlander 2, which I know everybody hates, but there's a scene when, Connor and Virginia, right after he de-ages and he and Virginia Madsen's character meet, and it's just like shag against the wall for no reason. And it's like way gratuitous and it's way too long. And it's like, he's fully dressed. And I understand that. And this, the guy who plays Horatio isn't totally fully dressed, but it's shot in such a way that. So again, it was just like, there was no reason for that. And it just seemed, and again, she chose to do the role, whatever, that's, you know, that's her, the actor's choice. I'm not saying the actor's wrong to do it. But it just, we didn't need to see it in such a lingering, it felt like we were leering instead of that we were watching. I don't want a sex scene in a movie to feel voyeuristic. Sure. If it's going to be there, and these people clearly love each other, which is what we're supposed to understand, then it doesn't need to feel so lecherous. It doesn't need to feel like a bang against the wall. It needs to feel like this is a private moment between them. And we
see a little bit of it.
Right. And when Penance is walking by and she hears it, that's enough. You get what's going on. So you get the exact same message without 5 minutes of softcore for no reason.
Well, for the director's benefit.
Right? It had to be. It makes no sense. I just don't understand. There is a time and place for sex scenes, for sure.
There's
a time and place when nudity is used well. We were just talking off air about forgetting Sarah Marshall. Jason Segel is always willing to release the dong. And he always plays it like in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. He's the only nude person.
Yeah.
In the whole movie. And it's hysterical every time he does it because he's flipping the paradigm. And he's like, if this were a woman, if this were a movie made 20 years ago, this would just be a naked woman for no reason. But it's like, here he is. And he refused. And Kristen Bell like wants him to cover up, but he won't. And it's funny.
Absolutely.
Because it's subverting it. And Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox one, same thing. There's a scene where there's just like a dick in his face. And it's funny because it's like, hey, we're subverting what you think you're going to see. So, and then there's obviously sometimes, you know, and there's a movie where there's a sex scene and it's done tastefully and the nudity is fine because the movie is about that. This isn't a show about that. So it just, I know we haven't even talked about the good stuff yet, but it drove me crazy. It was like, this is how this episode starts, and it really, and I wonder if that's why it takes us till halfway through when we switch perspectives to Penance, because we know she's not only just the actor, but the character is so prim and is so very Victorian and is so very right for this time and place in so many ways. Maybe it's when we finally get onto something, we get onto a story that we're like, oh, I forgot something's happening, instead of just, I don't know. It just felt icky for no reason.
Agreed. And actually, we'll talk about that, Penance. We will jump, because I think we'll just talk about that in a minute, because I think we're on the topic. I do wonder, like, we can point the finger at Whedon a bit, and I think we're right to do that now because of everything that's come out. But I do wonder if it's an HBO remit as well. Like, some boobs every episode has to appear, and there needs to be a bit swearing every episode. Everyone needs to, we have to have at least one fuck, and because, you know, this is a grown-up show. We're a grown-up network. We're not, you know, we're not the CW. We're not making Buffy 2. So I do wonder if it's a bit of a remit as well to fit into the kind of the HBO brand.
But you've got a sex club.
Right? I agree.
You can have nudity in every episode if you want, right in the background, anytime you want, because there's a sex. So all you got to do is scene in sex club, and you can just have the main characters in the front talking, and you can have all the boobs you want. And it would make sense in that context, because you're in a sex club. But instead, it's just, I think you're right. And I never watched Game of Thrones. It was not my jam. I'm more of a sci-fi than a fantasy person. I like, you know, I mean, I like fantasy. I like is the Tolkien fantasy, and most of the rest of the fantasy I don't really love. So I didn't care about the books. I didn't care about the show. I just didn't care. But I know there's lots, the dongs have been released in that.
Dongs have been released.
Which I learned from South Park, actually. But the thing about that is that, right, do people think, do the idiots at HBO think people loved Game of Thrones because of the nudity? Or, like, and having never watched it, is the show better or worse for the nudity? Is it, like, the nudity makes the show better? Like, would it be just as good of a show with all the blood and everything and the dragons, but everybody kept their clothes mostly on?
Yeah, of course it would. Absolutely. And it reduced massively as the series went on. It was definitely like a catch people in the first couple of seasons.
Oh, okay.
And then it was used more sparingly and used for effect. Still not without its issues at times. But it was definitely like an early on, we've got some really attractive people here. Let's get
I think you're right. I think that's 100% then that's what it is. It's like, we want to get eyeballs on this. And if people hear that, hey, there's some boobies, then you're going to get the 15-year-old.
Yeah,
I need to see some booby crab. But there, this show's not interesting to them. I mean, you can't tell me. Listen, maybe the argument is we're going to lure you in with boobies, and then we're going to throw this awesome feminist story at you, and you'll learn something. We could maybe pretend that's true. If you know, they may be lying to themselves with that, but I just don't think you can have that both ways and say we're luring you here with nudity, but it's not equal. I mean, again, if you're luring us here with boobs, but then we're showing you that everybody's naked and that's okay to do, because that's what a sex club would be. There would be naked men. When you have sex, 15-year-old boy, you should also take your boots off, because, you know, that's how this works. So you could, if that's what you were doing, if you were using that as the lure, but then showing some equality there, and all of the nudity is unequal and all of the sex in this is unequal, except for this moment, the one with Amalia and Horatio, that is totally equal. But she is clearly, you know, manipulating him throughout the series too. So you could even say that a little, but then there's another way you could have used the nudity to prove that by saying, you know, he's fully naked and she's just got her skirt up. And then you'd be like, oh, what are you doing? You're flipping the narrative, but you're not. Just like,
yeah.
Typical 80s sex comedy.
Yeah, agreed. It's in a show like this, I said it before, I'm repeating myself, but purports to be about, you know, feminism and strong women, and particularly in a time when they haven't given rights and they're fighting for them here. And all the women's nudity is about male control. I agree, not this one. Also, she's the only one that's seen nude, so it's still problematic. I think it's just about balance. It's just a balance. If we had a nice lingering shot of Horatio's dong, penis, cock, dick, whatever word anyone wants to use, then it's absolutely fine. But I guess then you're really in danger of pushing the 15-year-old boys away, because they don't want to see penises unless...
Right. Well, you know, and it's funny because... since we're talking penis. So... Yeah. The first time I remember people going to see Watchmen who'd never read Watchmen. And then they, I remember I was teaching at a college in mid Michigan, and there were people who were just like, people I worked with, students, everybody's flabbergasted. They're like mortified, like coming in and like, oh my God, I just went and saw Watchmen. And I was like, giant penis. And they're like, yeah, have you seen it? And I'm like, I've read it. I know what's about to happen. No one was prepared for that. And and then in the new Watchmen remake, they were like, we're still going to do it. You're going to get a blue dick, and that's what's going to happen. So I always appreciated that. But it was one of those moments where I always wonder, is that what hurt the Watchmen movie? The giant blue penis? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not as bad as everybody says it is. And so you may have just stumbled onto it. It's like, we don't want the 15-year-old boys to go away, so we can't have this equal balance. And again, but like you just said, then you can't pretend this is what your show is.
No, it's a real problem. It is frustrating. And it is something that's been spoken about every episode, but I think they continue to do it. So we need to keep talking about it.
Release the dong.
Yeah, absolutely. So the pedants thing then.
Oh, I love her.
Clearly, we'll celebrate her in a minute, I think. But that scene I found really uncomfortable as well.
Yeah.
I know that she's protected from nudity, and clearly that's an actor choice, I'm sure. But it feels voyeuristic again. And I know, again, you can argue it's meant to be because it's Augie's coming in, and it's meant to be, it's kind of played for laughs, I suppose.
It's not funny.
But it's not funny anyway. And it's definitely not funny when you know who directed this episode.
Right. Well, and what makes it more off-putting is in episode one, Amelia says, go take a bath, you stink. And anytime, so we are led to understand that anytime she's in her, where she's working all night, she's going to smell bad. So why not? That's the joke, is that Augie shows up and she's rank. That's the joke is there, is that she's like, she didn't know he was, I mean, I know he's like, I'm here for our meeting, so we're supposed to think maybe she's finally cleaning up because Augie's coming. But she's so in the moment that she wouldn't have remembered. And then that would have been the joke where Amelia could have been like, maybe you should have
bought.
So there's the joke. It's there. It writes itself because you set it up. It was Chekhov's bath. So you can't then drop that in episode five and be like, oh yeah, that's suddenly she's, it was again, just voyeuristic and unnecessary. And you're right. Well, she definitely covered up and it was just the back and there was like the mirror was clouded. It was, it wasn't funny. And it's hurting what could be an excellent show. This, these things I think are going to damn the show. So I really do hope they get another six without him, with Jane in charge as the showrunner. I think she can save it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. You're saying that, it jumped into my head then about, cause obviously this whole Augie and penance thing is Kaylee and Simon again, isn't it? From
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
But in that show, they do the inverse. They do what you just said. Like Simon, I think says a comment, is it in the movie maybe about, or very late on in the series? I'm not sure. He says about how like you're at your best when you're covered in oil and grease. And because that's who you are.
Right. He likes her best when she's greasy. Cause she of course wants to be a frilly pretty girl. She loves, she loves the pink dress that Captain Tight Pants gives her. But she is, and that's what Simon loves about her, is her filthiness. Yeah, I think you're right. And again, I don't know why they just, and I know that's the thing, is they're like, but he's got a formula.
Yeah.
There's the Whedon formula is here. He's got one. So just lean into it. If people like Simon and Kayla, they're everybody's favorite space couple. So let's just give it to it. I'm fine with it if you would just give it to us. Yeah, it was weird. It didn't work again because... Nice. He could show boobs, so he gets to. So he does.
Yeah.
Wonder if the script is just like boobs. He just like writes boobs a lot on there.
With little dots inside the O's. Yeah.
Yeah, he draws the, he doesn't even write the word. Right. He just, or inside the O's, you're saying he puts the dots. Yeah. That would be smart. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No. So it's a flashback a little bit. I guess I was critical, wasn't I, about the chopping of the start. But we get a couple of key bits of information, don't we? We learn that Mattson was behind Mary's murder for definite. And we learn that Lavinia's been looking for a cure for the touched. So she's obviously playing both sides. Any thoughts on either of those two kind of plot developments?
Well, I mean, we knew Lavinia was, because Olivia Williams was just like, I'm going to resting bitch face my way through this performance. And you are, just so you all know, that I'm not what I seem. You know, she's a good actor and she's going for it. I was not surprised because she knows her brother is touched, whether he she knows. And so I don't think it's about the cure for everyone. I think it's a cure for Augie because of that moment when she says, well, she likes penance. Penance, you know, she has nothing against penance, but because she knows what it would look like for the family name. And so that's where that, you know, the typical Victorian thing. And, you know, he's the man of the family. Well, she's the leader of the family at that time. It's him. He's the owner of everything. So she needs him. She can't risk losing everything because her brother's an idiot. So with all of his other stupid, dumb, weird stuff that he does, then if she can cure the touch, she can cure him. And she doesn't want it to get out. So that's what I think. So that didn't super surprise me. Those two, and Masson being a killer, of course. I mean, you know, we know his daughter's not dead. We know that this is a performance. And so if you're going to lean into the performance, you have to. And so that means sometimes you have to kill the innocents to protect the people you love. And I think that's what that was about. So again, it was all set up. None of it was super shocking. I think it's important to pushing it along. But I also still think, like you said, it's so packed. There's only one episode left after this. I don't know how it's all going to get in there.
No, I think Pip Torrens has been a real star of this series, hasn't he, as well?
Yeah, he's great.
He's the villain we need driving forwards. I think whoever's going to be like the lead villain, the big bad, it needs to be him. And I think it doesn't do a lot, the reveal that they were behind it, but other than make last episode's tete-a-tete with him and Amalia even better, like the fact that that guy's going through those motions in the kind of pretense to satisfy her and make her happy, but it's also just completely admitting to what he's done, just shows
to her face. Yeah.
Absolute gall of the guy that he just doesn't give a shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. I think he's doing a great job. And yeah, so I wasn't super surprised by those turns of events. They made perfect sense to me. I think I am, to quote the other show we do, bored now with Swan.
Sure. I agreed.
He is an unnecessary, other than, again, plot device to get Mundy in somewhere. He's really, and the guy's fine. James Norton is his name. He's fine. I just don't care. I don't care about him. I don't care about that character. He can go now, especially now because Augie owns the club. Now that Augie owns the club, can he just go? Of everybody who, the surprise death every episode, no offense to the actor, I need it to be Hugo. I don't care.
Yeah, fair.
I just don't care.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's going to be him for a while, sadly, though.
Yeah.
He's our well, maybe actually, because now
he's our handsome white guy.
Well, he's also our Whedon surrogate, isn't he? In this
show,
I suppose. But then he's not in charge anymore. So, yeah, all right. So then I think the scene that I think I said earlier about how, like, actually it kicks off with the penance doing the invention, didn't I? But actually, there's one little moment earlier before, I think, when Ben Chaplin's detective is giving us that nice bit of exposition in this police station. And Effie, the new character for this episode, is in, doing her journalistic magic. That was quite a nice scene, I thought.
Yeah. Again, Captain Exposition, and he owns it. It's a tough role to play Captain Exposition, because that can really be bad. And you know, from as a comic book reader, when you get sometimes in a comic book, that gets draggy. And so in the shows, that also gets draggy. But because he owns it, and because you've given us a new character, you set her up in the previous episode, so you're like, all right, I'm in. You know, it would make sense. She's being a pain in the ass, and he recognizes that she's got talent. He's always playing a game too. So he's like, well, I'm going to give her just enough so she can give me something. He's trying to. So I think it worked out fine. Yeah, I like that. I think that their chemistry is good. But again, it's him. He's good with that. Like when he and Amalia are squaring off, he's good. In those tender moments with Mary, he's good. It's him. You know, sometimes you just, if. And not to say these other actors are bad, but he's definitely just bringing it to every scene.
He is. I did think the actress, Margaret Tuttle, as she is billed on IMDb, she's really good as well, I think. And it's really interesting because each time I feel like I'm getting drawn to a character. So like in episode 3, you know, drawn to Mary, they give her some really interesting backstory, kill her off. Lucy, you're drawn into Lucy in episode 4. All right, she's not killed off, but she's gone at least for now, for a little while.
Yeah.
So my brain was going, oh, Effie's a really interesting character. What a good performance. Something doesn't feel quite right, but I really like her. She'll be dead by the end.
Sort of.
And she kind of is as a character. She kind of is not going to come back.
Yeah, because she's not even her. That was a good turn.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it right at the very end, I think, because I think
of course.
I'm not sure upon analysis it holds up much weight, but it's good in the moment anyway.
Sure.
One thing with Lavinia, I thought, as I was watching this episode, and it's the only time I've ever thought it, I wondered if she's got a bit of a split personality.
Oh.
She seems like completely different at different times. Yeah. Almost like a, I know we just watched season 5 and this isn't Buffy, but you know, she's almost kind of Glory Benn at times. Like she's almost like a completely different person with who she's talking to. And in that dining scene, she obviously like completely snaps and goes at those people. And it seems like she really, really cares about those that have had a turn and are touched. And then of course, then we get other scenes when she's completely the other way and it's completely like, we need that cure, we need to get rid of them. So when she's talking to the doctor, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm reading too much into that.
No, I think that's a good read. I mean, for me, I kind of took it as she, because all of the weight of the whole family, the Bidlow name is on her, even though it's really on Augie. So I just always kind of feel like, and she, I think there's some guilt there too about what she's doing. Because I think she genuinely likes Penance and she likes, you know, she likes all of these women that she's and girls that she's gotten to know, but she knows that if she finds a cure, she has to cure them all because of Augie. So I feel like it could just be that it is literally stress. But again, we don't have enough chance to delve into it. If what you say is true in the next episode, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
No.
Yeah, it would be a good reveal. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'd be interested to find out, wouldn't it? I think, yeah, our predictions for the next episode are going to be really interesting. I can't wait to see what you think, because I've got some thoughts as well. We're leaning heavy into X-Men again, aren't we, with the whole kind of cure and the touched registration and the mutant registration. There's a real, you know, X-Men is such a touchstone for this series, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's okay. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with you know, loving a thing and playing around in it. I think, well, there's a book series called These Vicious Masks.
Okay, yeah.
And it's a Victorian X-Men, and it was actually billed as Jane Austen meets the X-Men. So I was like, sold. Okay. I don't even know what it is. That was the tagline. And I was like, and if this is wrong, you got me to buy a book. So good on you. It was really good. So there's a lot of the romance. So it was a little more romancy than even the Jane Austen books are, but it was really good. And so it leaned hard into the X-Men. It was the same thing. There's gifts and the people have certain things. And some of them are really fun. The person who can make people tell the truth, that character's in there. And so that's just that's always a lot of fun. So that was a really good book series. So I just think the X-Men are so important. So I think it's okay to lean into them. But the thing is, we also understand this is what would happen. So the reason that it works in the X-Men is that they couldn't not include the mutant registration. They couldn't not include a cure because that is, of course, what people would do.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
And then I think I'm just looking at my notes. It's noted a couple of what I thought were really killer lines in this episode. I'm not sure. Did Whedon write the episode? I know he directed it.
He did not write this one.
Okay.
It was written by Melissa. I'm not going to say her last name right because it looks like it's IQBAL. And I don't know how to say that.
Iqbal, maybe. Yeah.
Iqbal. Okay.
But I thought, so one was by Ben Chaplin when he said, when he said to Swan, I think, you're not a man with an office, you're a pimp with a gimmick.
That was awesome.
Amazing line. And the delivery of the growl behind it was so, so good. And then later on, the sin is in bloom. I thought were two like really well delivered lines that are kind of telling you about the show and telling you like what characters are feeling, but also kind of points of the show, what they're trying to get to, I think, as well. Particularly that second one, that sin is in bloom, was really quite telling.
That was a great line. My favorite line is from Primrose and the big standoff. As I mentioned it earlier, she was just like, I love you both. And then she chooses to stand down. And I thought they both could have used her.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And so that you have literally your best weapon when you're going to go to battle, choosing to sit out because she loves everybody too much. So I was like, aha, she's such a great character and the actor is very good. So I just thought that was lovely.
Agreed.
And I think Myrtle sits out too, doesn't she?
She does, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess arguably most of them do. We kind of get like a main character split mostly, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, but I just thought that was great. No, I think there's a lot of, I mean, to me, that was, I think you're right. There's some good dialogue lines. I think the standoff scene, which in hindsight, now that we've talked through it, I actually think is pretty great. In the moment, it bugged me. But now I understand why. Like, it's actually really good. It's really well done. And their actors are earnest and it makes sense. And you're creating genuine tension over what, which has been building for four episodes leading to this, the difference of ways to do things. But see, you think she's a time traveler. I think she's an alien.
Okay. Interesting.
And so, and I think Penance knows. And so the humanity of Penance and this other, I have a mission driven otherworldly beings, like, you know, like a Dr. Manhattan-y kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you see that, like, her heart is good, but she also has a mission that is going to come first.
Yeah.
Whereas Penance is like, damn the mission, because humanity is better. Like, Penance would probably doom the world to save a mouse. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, because she's that kind of person. So I just thought that was a great setup. And I think it paid off really well in everything Penance does in this episode. When she's allowed to do stuff, I think that is great. I think the best, the reverse heist scene at the end.
Yeah.
Because it's not really a heist. You're sort of trying to steal something, but not. I really enjoyed that scene. I thought that was really well shot. I really like Vinnie Heaven is nimble. That's a good addition. That person is a they. That person is non-binary person. So Vinnie's great as nimble. I think nimble is such a cool character. So I really do enjoy that end sequence. Those last, as you said right from the beginning, those last 10 minutes are special. It is a little too. They maybe should have had Penance's team be a little smaller.
You think?
Well, because then you're like, there's so many things to follow.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's the same thing. Then we can't sit with any of them. Like Harriet, that's terrifying what happens to Harriet. Mm. But we don't get to spend enough time with Harriet until that very, you know what I mean? So it's just like, I don't know. But I did enjoy the ending. And we'll talk about the ending, but I thought that was the highlight of the show was the heist.
I agree. For me, it gave me Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves vibes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's not a bad thing because I love that movie.
I do too. Fuck me, good. You cleared it.
Yeah, absolutely. But it had that kind of sense of, you know, you've got somebody up in the battlements and you've got somebody down in the pit and you've got, so it gave me those vibes, I think. And I'm hoping that's on purpose. Yeah,
but that's a long time. I saw that in the theater. I really loved that movie. I even had a little Will Scarlet action figure.
Oh, I love it.
From that movie. Yeah. I love that movie.
I can't wait to introduce that one into family movie night. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah,
that whole sequence, I agree, is definitely the best part of the episode. But as we said at the start, like, this is what's happening every episode, is the final sequence is the thing that keeps me really, really invested in coming back. And then you get like a little final twist, don't you, normally afterwards, almost as like
do again.
Yeah, like a pre-credit stinger. Should we talk about Anne Skelly for a little while?
Sure. I mean, what a star.
Because it was nice for her to get some extra screen time, wasn't it? She felt a little bit lacking for the last couple of episodes.
Yeah, because she's too goody, like the character. But you need that. I think you need the moral balance, and she is it. And so you miss it when it's not there, because you need her to be the voice of reason. And, you know, it's nice too when I know you're saying she's like, hey, she's Kaylee, of course she is. But it's also nice that when the Iron Man isn't a dick either, you know, when the genius, there's such a thing in comics that the genius is also either a monster, Bruce, or an asshole, Tony. You know, like Shuri is her spiritual sister. Shuri's even a little too cocky for my liking in the comics anyway. And in the movie, she's not in the movie. And I mean, she's good in the movie. I love Black Panther, but you know, Shuri's not the star of that. But in the comics, even Shuri's a little cocky. So maybe more like Ironheart, maybe more like Riri. But I think I think that idea of having a genius who's not a cocky asshole, who's like, my genius isn't what defines me. I'm doing this for good. So I think Anne Skelly's performance nails that. And it just, I don't know. You think you're like, oh, you know, who else would be good in this role? I really can't think of anybody who fits that age. I've never seen her in anything before, but I'm trying to think of anybody who's in that age range who could pull this off with such earnestness. And I can't think of anybody because she's so good. It's like her role, she owns it forever. So I love that about her as a character and as an actor.
I agree. I think you can only, you can imagine the casting day when she walked in, can't you? And they were probably like, all right, we've got her. Just send everybody else home. Definitely. And that's best exemplified in her speech, isn't it? When she walks out into the courtyard, that speech she delivers is not powerful, I suppose, in terms of the words, but the way that she delivers it is, and particularly the way that towards the end, she tails off and is like not quite sure how to finish it. But it's fine because she's already done all the hard work before. But I love that kind of character trait of hers, and they lean into it and it works perfectly in that moment.
Yeah, she's really, and she's, I'm just looking at her. She doesn't have a lot of acting credits to her name.
Sure.
You know, so she
will.
She will, I'm telling you. She is a star. She's done some TV here and there, but yeah, she is a star waiting to happen. She's really special.
Feels like she'll be, you know, like Karen Gillan, who obviously was a Doctor Who companion. That's where she started. And then she's obviously gone on to be massive. She feels like she might have that kind of career trajectory where...
Actually, that's a good comparison. I think I love those Jumanji movies. And she, every scene she's... Have you seen those?
I have, yeah. She's amazing.
She's amazing. I mean, that cast is outstanding. And then she just drops in and just owns it. And you're like, oh, this is what acting... Because Rock's playing the Rock and...
Yeah,
everybody's just playing themselves, and she's not. She's acting,
mm-hmm.
So it's like she's like, "Listen, people, act. Don't just be Jack Black and Kevin Hart and The Rock. This is what acting looks like." And she just makes them all look silly. It's
agreed.
It's a great. They're fun, charming movies. But I think you're right. It's because in this larger than life thing, sometimes a smaller performance stands out. But you know what? I think you're right too. The way that the speech. It's just, she just is so full of everything. She can't get it out.
Yeah.
It's great.
That is great. Absolutely. I agree. And then the kind of little team, we get the little team ups, don't we? So we get, we get Nimble and we get, I can't think of what the character's name is. The strong fighter. I'm not sure what her name is because she's not really been in it that much, has she?
Boy, what is her name? She is Sue Penguin.
Okay, great.
That's her name. She's the one who just keeps saying, True said to protect you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you get Nimble and you get Harriet.
And you get Desiree, don't you?
Desiree. Oh, God. What a great, that's a great character, too. And that actor, Ella Smith, she's great, too. Everybody's so good. I just can't get over how great of them. That's the thing. That's why it'll be so sad that the plot is going to get in the way of seeing more of this amazing character development show. So we split up. And this is the thing where, I'll save it. When you ask me for my prediction, it comes back to this moment. So
yeah, I feel like we might have a similar one. Maybe everyone's got the same one. I'm not sure.
Sure. Yeah.
But it all goes to pot, doesn't it? Nothing goes right because Malady's got her own plan going on.
That's why I'm saying it's a reverse heist because it's nothing goes right. It's like it's like let's set it all up and then it just goes to shit and that's okay because everybody's tricked and that's the point is that it's not that. Tenants was wrong. It's that everybody's wrong. Everybody's believed the narrative that the writer has put in their heads. So it's really smart. I think it's good. I think sometimes the bad guys need to lose.
Yeah.
Or the good guys need to lose. I mean, and the good guys lost. Yeah.
A couple of nice moments, isn't there? Which you got a little umbrella gadget and then Nimble using that his power was great. And then
what a cool character, Nimble.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm pleased you said that. They go by they, because I did say, obviously it hasn't come out yet, but on the episode with my sister last week, I said for four, it felt like they purposefully cast somebody who was non-binary for that role.
Yeah, it works perfectly.
And actually, because they keep calling them Nimble and they're leaving out the Jack part, aren't they? Which is clearly
been
done
course.
On purpose.
Yeah.
And then Malady,
just
jumps off and kills herself anyway.
That was such a great scene. That was a really great shot.
I was like,
just so good.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I already used this phrase, so I'm going to use it again. Chekhov's nasty gangrenous foot shows up at the end. I thought that was a great twist. I didn't see that coming, that she would jump off. And then that it wasn't her either is also, you know... But that was a good setup. It's like, what do you mean we're not going to let her bathe and we're not going to let her do this and we're not going to let her do this? So that was all set up but that's good writing because if you're like, wait, that doesn't work. How you're saying they would never, I mean, and then they show her, she never got the black stuff off of her face and they had her in the four-way neck thing. So it was really well set up.
It was. Yeah. And I think Amy Manson as Malady has had some good moments, but I think there has been sometimes when she's maybe pushed it a little bit too far. I think that's what she's been asked to do, but at times it's felt a little bit kind of theatrical is probably the best way I can put it. But she was excellent in this episode, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because the performance is a little more pulled back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see like when she comes back as Malady, because it's not Malady that's dead, it's Clara.
Right.
Her like sycophantic follower, isn't it? It'll be interesting to see when she comes back where she's going to let where that level is going to be, because clearly she can make a conscious choice about how she presents herself.
Yeah, she's right. It's all an act. It makes you understand the difference between having a mental illness and being stupid. And you know, for the most part, people with mental illnesses are really intelligent, and this shows off here. And the fact that she has that kind of control to play the reporter that whole time and to keep it under control, I just think it's really smart. And it was a great, I think it's her best performance as an actor so far. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a cool twist, and that Ben's, Mundy's character, is so pissed at himself that is right in front of him the whole time. She's just like begging him to figure it out, and he's not. So that's the moment where she is still letting it out in those ways. Like, she's telling him the answer and he just isn't listening.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's obviously some heavy Joker echoes, aren't there, with Malady? I think perhaps Dark Knight kind of Joker level, I think, more than comic perhaps. But there's that kind of like almost Kaiser Soze Usual Suspects reveal in this episode, wasn't there, as she walks off, which I think really works in the moment. I'm not entirely sure. I don't know how do you feel? I'm not entirely sure it holds up when you start thinking about it.
It does not. I mean, it does work in the moment. It's super cool. And you're right, it was definitely the Usual Suspects. That was the thing. Because even that scene where she's begging him to find out that she's lying and he doesn't see it.
It's like a pinboard, isn't it? Like it is.
Yeah. They do that whole scene. So I think the reason it's a cool reveal, it does go back to the incredulity, and they're saying it out loud. And that's what's supposed to distract you, right? Is that when all the old white men are talking and the one guy is like, we can't do this, we can't do this. And they're like, this is what we're going to do. They don't give a good reason for it. So here's the only thing I can think, and you can tell me if you think I'm crazy, is Massa knew the whole time.
You think?
Why else? If we get to the next episode and one of those old white men didn't know what was happening, that it wasn't the real Malady and isn't in on it, isn't one of Malady, because Malady's sycophants, the big guy, the lady with the, they're sycophants, they're all the way in. So there's no reason one of these people couldn't be a Malady sycophant. That's her turn.
Sure, okay.
It's charm, right?
Yeah, so it's not that she's an agent of them, it's just that
one of them is an agent of her.
Yeah.
And convince the rest of them. So it has to either be that Lord Masson knew, and she is an agent of them, and she wants the cure just as much.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Right. So if he's like, she's my way to get the cure because she can do X, Y, Z. Once we kill her, then she can act.
And it gets people to hate the touched as well, doesn't it? Which is what he wants.
Yeah. Right. So it's either that or one of them is an agent of her. But I feel like the only way it works on paper is one of them had to be in on it, because the one guy who is away, I don't understand why we're doing this. And they're like, because isn't a good enough answer. There's been nothing they've done before that has made them, they're cruel, but they're not that kind of cruel. Mm-hmm. So it's such an important thing that she stays dirty and unwashed and everything. Because once they wash her and take her boots off, they know it's not her.
Yeah.
So that's why either the whole group of men are in on it, or at least one of them is in on it. That's the only way it works. And if we get to the next episode and we find out that that's not true, then it was all nonsense. Then it was all just plot armor because it had to be.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because obviously what we're getting here, isn't it? We're also getting a flashback to episode one, in that the woman that was killed in the mines was by her, and then she faked the message. Yeah. And then, because that's the real Effie, isn't it, that she's now taking the place of. So there's a lot of convoluted planning going on to get to this point, which I know we forgive in a lot of comics and TV and films.
Sure.
I think just because they presented her as such a chaotic character up until this point, it's a fun reveal, but I'm finding it a little hard to buy. But you're convincing me in terms of like how it might work if they do it correct in the next episode.
That's it. It all comes down to that. It all comes down to either she's working for them or she's the big bad.
Yeah,
and that's been the fake out, is that the whole time she's such an obvious big bad that you've written her off, but that really she is the master manipulator. I mean, keep in mind, Harley Quinn is a doctor.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, it never works that Harley Quinn is the way she is in the comic book, and in the, because she wouldn't be. And, you know, the way that Denny created her isn't who she became, right? Obviously. But you can't have this person with a doctor in psychology also act this way. There has to be some level of control. And so I feel like that's it, either has to be that one of the two of them are manipulating each other or playing against each other, but they're all in on it. And if it's not that at the end, then I'm going to be pretty bugged. Because then none of it adds up.
Yeah, I like that. So as I talk about the next episode, but maybe we'll make some predictions. Before we get there, was there anything from this one that you think we haven't spoken about?
No, I think we nailed it. I'm sorry we were all over the place. I just, you know, because I just really love the performances and every new character they bring in. Vinny Heaven is so great, isn't it? But what a great performance that person's giving. And we didn't even talk about Annie. I think that Annie's a great actor and she's doing a bang up job. And I am really impressed with the level of talent. Even like Nick Frost's, you know, cronies, they're all good. Even the three, I've not seen anybody I'm like, ooh, you missed with that. I mean, again, I think James Norton is giving us the performance he's supposed to give.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not great. And I don't like him. And he can go. You can go now.
Yeah.
Bored now. So I think it's fine. I think we hit it all. Again, release the dogs is a problem. And I'll be interested to see. I do have predictions. We'll see. I have a prediction for what I think happens next episode and then how I think that plays forward.
Hit us. You want it? Go for it. Yeah.
Okay. So this is the timey-wimey stuff
that
I was talking about at the beginning. We don't actually see what happened in the mines. So that is the timey-wimey stuff that I think will happen in episode 6, is that episode 6 will begin with the last scene of this where she's like, how'd it go? Because you see they're all beat up and shit's
bad. Yeah.
So we're going to back up and then we're going to play this at the same time.
Yeah.
Which again, it was fine. But again, there was so much wasted space in this episode that you could have just done a double cut back. And just, we could have watched both things at the same time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we're going to start with that. We're going to find out what's going on. And I think that will be the first half of the next episode is
great.
Amelia's adventure. And then what we will discover is Amelia's an alien and Augie will find out about his sister's, Lavinia's plans, and he will somehow turn, because he goes down in the mines. So he's obviously been set up to know what's happening. And so he's going to be some sort of hero in some way. And then ultimately we'll feel resolution. They'll have either released the Kraken or not released the Kraken, whatever. I don't think we're taking their powers away, because I think the end will have a resolution of that. And we'll find out all this stuff about Amalia and her secrets will come out. And then I think the final end, the stinger, is going to be we find out the relationship between Masson and Malady.
Okay, interesting.
And that's the end. So that's setting up the next 6. So we get an arc of the you know, MacGuffin. But the real story is this other thing.
Yeah.
That's how I think.
Yeah. I totally agree about the first half. We'll have maybe a Penance and Amalia. So what really happened? And then
agreed. Yeah.
And then I think, that's really interesting. Because we still have, we've got the Amalia and Malady connection to figure out as well, haven't we? I mean, the episode is called True. So clearly it's going to
be about her
a lot about her and her backstory. So we'll find out if you're right or if I'm right. Or if we're both wrong, in fact.
We're both wrong. I suspect it's that.
Probably.
But I love that she's a time traveler. I think that's awesome. I'm pro time travel. I'm always for that. And because they're obviously an advanced technology.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense. Yeah, that's smart.
So I wondered, like, I'm based on the same boat as you. I just wondered if the lead in for the next 6 would be that connection between Malady and Amalia. So, I mean,
that would also be fine.
We're getting set up for moving forward, aren't we?
Yeah, well, I think that Amalia, real Amalia True, is dead.
You do think
whatever she called her, Molly, is that what she calls her?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Amalia, it's just shortened of Amalia, but I think the body that person is no longer with us, and that the person who's in Amalia True is somebody different. So whether it's somebody has jumped from time into her body, or whether it's an alien who's taken over, because she keeps saying, this isn't my face.
Yes.
So I feel like the reason that she may not necessarily totally understand Malady and what Malady thinks she knows is that she genuinely doesn't know. Like, she doesn't have all of Amalia's memories.
Yeah.
Just the last few years since the turn. And so she's got a sense of who she is, because people are, you're going to be able to figure out who you were in over 3 years. So that's just kind of my thing, is that Malady knows way more about Amalia than Amalia knows about Amalia.
Yeah. And that answers Dan's problem from episode 3, doesn't it? Where, like, how come she didn't realize who she was when she saw him on the stage and stuff?
Yeah.
I think that answers that. I think it was a fair question at that point, but now we've got past it, we're kind of getting some answers. Yeah, I mean, I think it just come to me in that moment as you were talking. I think I'm leaning into the time travel thing because it makes it be Quantum Leap. And I just love Quantum Leap.
His NCIS show is ending. So the talk has been, would they do a Quantum Leap reboot? He's not, please. Scott Bakula is not against it.
Please. As long as he's involved in some way, if he's going to be Al, then I'm all in.
It'd be hard. If he were to play the other character.
Yeah. So Scott Bakula's like the Al character. If he's
Al. Yeah.
I'm down for that 100%.
Yeah. Because that's where he's at in the stages in his career.
Yeah.
Just standing around smoking a cigar. That's where you're at. Yeah.
I'd love to be at that place. Great.
I'll just show up. I'll shoot my whole season in a week. All right. Yeah. See ya. I'm out.
Lovely. All right. Great. So I think, we're going to find out, aren't we, in a little bit of time.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear, how you guys think it ends, you and Dave. And this has been fun. I think this is a smart call on your part. This show has been delightful.
Good.
And this, us doing this, your show, I think the Nevers could be delightful. I think it's still brushed up against delightful. And I have hope, because, again, it's disappointing. You never want to see it. I'm going to go back to another movie that didn't do very well, but had amazing performances and was perfectly cast, and it is the original Golden Compass film.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. That is, if you telling me that Ava Green isn't a witch, I'm going to fight you. If you're telling me that Nicole Kidman isn't a heartless monster, I will fight. Sam Elliott as Lee Scoresby. I love those books, by the way. Those, the His Dark Materials books are very important in my life. I love them. I get choked up. I love Pan so much. And his relationship with Lyra. Lyra is like in my top 5 favorite fictional characters of all time. There's things, like, sometimes I can't get something done around the house, and I'll be like, if York Bearnison were here, because, you know, like, that's the I love the, so that original movie bombed because the ending, because it was done poorly, but that was the perfect cast. Daniel Craig, Ava Green. I mean, Kathy Bates is the voice of Hester. It was like the perfect movie, and it totally failed for other reasons. The studio got over-involved. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, maybe HBO is like, boob it up, boob, boob, boobs. And you're like, you're ruining what the show could be. So it's going to be frustrating to me when this doesn't come back. Because last time I checked, they're not even filming the next 6 right now.
No.
So I'm going to, because you got kids in this.
It's a problem.
So that is a problem, there's only a handful, but you do have some.
Children
actors, you got to get on it or the show's over. So this is my fear, is that this is going to be one of those things that everybody's like, oh, they never sucked. And you're like, did it though? There were problems with it, but it deserved a second one. And the Golden Compass, there were problems with it, but there was never been a better cast movie ever. I don't know. And that's just, I will go on Comics on Trial and defend that original Golden Compass all day long. Ian McKellen as York Bearnison. Come on, are you fucking kidding me? It was perfect in every way, but it wasn't good for all the reasons this isn't good. It's the same thing where it's a great thing. It's just missing one thing. So I'd be really upset that all these amazing performances are going to be wasted. And I think they are.
Yeah, it is minor tweaks. And I think they've always promised, haven't they, these first 6 will be kind of an arc. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a problem, which is good, but there's also a problem there in that they can go, all right, that'll do. Yeah, it happened with Lost, didn't it? They had to write Walt out in Lost because he grew up too much.
I never watched Lost.
But he grew up too much between season one and season two. They were like, well, this show's meant to, you know, season two's meant to start the day after. He suddenly looks 2 years older.
Yeah, you can't do that, right?
Yeah, so that's a good call. It's a problem because there's a few characters, isn't there? Primrose among them, who will...
Primrose in particular. Yeah, that's a problem.
I mean, got even more giant.
Well, that's the thing. You can fake it out because she's big. And so, yeah. I think... the girl who's playing, she's probably older than she is, but the girl who's playing Myrtle seems like a kid.
Sure, yeah.
And she may be older than she is. Maybe she's 16, so
they did make a point saying, like, Primrose, you've got nobody your age to talk to, and they brought Myrtle in. So they're supposed to be...
Yeah, 12 or 13, right?
Yeah.
And they're both great actors, so it'll be sad. You know, so anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to go down the... Golden Compass.
And I think I would have agreed with you on every point up until... The latest TV series, just because I love Ruth Wilson, so I think she's fantastic as Mrs. Coulter. I'm not saying Nicole Kidman wasn't good, but I'd probably take Ruth Wilson over most other actresses, to be honest.
I know she's in your top four. My thing about Ruth's performance, and this is just my personal thing, is I think she's playing her more crazy than evil.
Okay.
And she's what she's doing is spectacular. But I think I feel bad for Lin-Manuel Miranda because it's like he was miscast.
Yeah,
he is,
absolutely.
He's great at what he does.
He was so hot right now, they had to get him in, but yeah.
But Matthew McConaughey needed to be, that was the cast. That was the role. He was the one, right? He needed to play Lee. But no, I think what Ruth is doing is good, but I just, because for me, Mrs. Coulter's evil, not crazy.
Interesting. That's why she's Iago Machiavellian rather than,
How I feel about her. I hate her. She is up there with Iago. I hate her that much. She is such an evil, awful monster of a character. And I'm glad she, spoiler alert, everybody, I'm glad she fucking dies. Fuck her so much. Oh my God.
Well, that's the bombshell to leave this on, isn't it?
Sorry. I mean, you've read that, right? I didn't spoil that. Did I spoil that? You knew she died, right?
Yeah, I've read them.
Okay, sorry. Shit. Okay. Woo.
Anybody else that hasn't, there you go. That's what happens.
You can go ahead and cut that out. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's staying in. And in a minute, when you tell everybody where to find you, they can come and hunt you down.
For spoiling a 30-year-old book series.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So I am on the Twitters at Tricycle Boombox. And so obviously I'm on this network with you doing the other part of Season's Greetings with Buffy. And that has been a treat and a joy. And I've got Indie Comic Spotlight. But the most important thing that I do right now... is that Scott Weatherly has edited a book and I have an essay in it and it's called Judging Dread and it comes out in July. So that's very exciting. It's not the most important thing I do. It's the most exciting thing right now in my creative life is I've got an essay in a book. It's Sam Lotfi did the cover. And for those of you who've seen our group picture, he did that. So that's cool. So I'm all those places. Buy that book. arfarina.com is my website. Thank you. This is so good. It's always good to see you and talk to you. I'm just glad I got to do this.
It is. It's a joy. Yeah. Thank you for coming on. Like, obviously, I've been wanting you to come on every episode, really. Not that my other guests weren't great. I love those people too. But we always have a good time.
We do. Talk.
So, yeah, I really appreciate it. And now you know, people, go and find him. The Mrs. Coulter spoiler haters. Find him at arfarina.com.
Yeah.
But all that's left for me to say then to everyone who doesn't hate me because I didn't spoil anything. Is thank you for listening. I've been I Am Jack's Musings, and you can find me on Twitter where I'm most active too, and it's JACS. As Tony has said, this show is part of the Comics Emotion Network, which is a super place for the world's greatest people, dedicated to bringing you daily podcasts covering the full range of popular culture. So please make sure you take the time to rate Comics Emotion and subscribe. You will not be disappointed. I'll be back next week with a look at episode 6, and as we've alluded to, joining me will be co-podfather, a returning guest from episode 1, Dave Horrocks. Everything that has a beginning has an end, right? Looks like this might be the final end for the Nevers, but we'll wait for news on that, which I guess might come out fairly soon after episode 6 has aired. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and make sure you really listen. Don't just wait for your turn to speak. I am Jax, signing off.